pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that should not have flown. It was missing 5 feet of wing on one side. The wing it did have was from a completely different airplane. The rivets were hand-drilled by mechanics working under blackout curtains, and the pilot who volunteered to fly it said later that when he opened the throttles, the whole ship wanted to roll over on its back. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and today on The Hangar, we're telling one of my favorite stories in all of aviation. The kind of story that when you hear it the first time, you assume somebody is pulling your leg. They're not. It happened. There are photographs. And the men who did it went back to work the next morning like it was nothing. Before we get rolling, let me tell you who's keeping the lights on today. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo, private pilot, instrument rating, commercial ATP type ratings, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it, and every coin tells a story, which is kind of what we do here. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let me set the scene. It is the summer of 1941. The United States is not yet in the war, but China has been fighting Japan for 4 years already, and one of the great untold stories of that war is the fight for the skies over inland China. Not the Flying Tigers yet. Those boys don't show up until later. I'm talking about the civilian airline that nobody remembers anymore. The China National Aviation Corporation, CNAC for short, Pan American owned a piece of it. The Chinese government owned the rest. And the airplanes, the workhorses, the ships doing the impossible flying were Douglas DC-3s and DC-2s. If you don't know the difference, let me paint it quick. The DC-2 came first in 1934, 14 passengers. Two Wright Cyclone engines. Pretty airplane. Then Douglas stretched it, widened it, smoothed the aerodynamics, and built the DC-3, 21 passengers. Bigger wing, bigger engines. Completely changed commercial aviation. They look similar if you don't know airplanes. They are not the same airplane. The wings are not the same size, not even close. Remember that, it matters. Now, CNAC was flying what they called the hump route, or at least the early version of it. Hauling mail, cargo, government officials, silver bullion sometimes, out of Hong Kong and into the free Chinese interior, places like Chongqing, Kunming, Suifu, small dirt strips carved out of river valleys. No radio navigation to speak of, no weather service. You flew by the seat of your pants, by the compass, by the river below you, and by knowing what a particular mountain looked like from three different angles. The airplane we care about tonight is a Douglas DC-3 tail number NC25691, delivered to CNAC in 1940. She flew the routes for about a year before her big day. Here's what happened. She was sitting on the ramp at Suifu, which is in Sichuan province deep in the Chinese interior. Crew had just finished offloading. The Japanese had been bombing and strafing CNAC airplanes anywhere they could find them. And on this particular afternoon, a flight of Japanese fighters came down out of the clouds and shot the living daylights out of her on the ground. When the smoke cleared, the DC-3 was still upright, but her right wing was gone. Not damaged. Gone. Machine gun fire had chewed through the main spar, and the outer wing panel had basically come apart. She was useless where she sat. Now here's where it gets interesting. A brand new DC-3 wing, crated up and shipped from Santa Monica, California, cost money, yes. But more importantly, it took months to get to inland China in 1941. Around the Cape, up through India, over the mountains, you couldn't just order one from the warehouse, and leaving a wrecked airplane on a dirt strip deep in contested China was basically gift-wrapping it for the next Japanese bombing run. CNAC's chief mechanic, a fellow by the name of Zygmunt Soldinsky, took one look at the airplane and sent a cable to headquarters in Hong Kong. The cable said, roughly, we have a spare wing. It's a DC-2 wing. Permission to bolt it on and fly her out. Hong Kong cabled back one word, permission. Now think about what he just proposed. The DC-2 wing is about 5 feet shorter than the DC-3 wing. The airfoil is different. The root attachment is different. The control cable runs are different. The ailerons are smaller. The dihedral is different. He's proposing to take a wing off of airplane A and attach it to airplane B. And the two airplanes are related. The way you and your cousin are related. Same family, not the same person. Any engineer at Douglas Aircraft would have told you it could not be done. Any flight test pilot would have told you it would not fly. Any insurance company, had there been such a thing in wartime China, would have canceled the policy on the spot. Soldinsky and his Chinese mechanics did it anyway. They had to modify the wing route. They had to fabricate adapter plates out of whatever steel they could find. They had to reroute the control cables so that the smaller DC-2 aileron could be worked by the DC-3 cockpit controls. They worked under tarps during the day to hide from reconnaissance, and by lantern light at night. It took them, depending on which account you read, somewhere between 3 and 6 days. When they were done, the airplane looked cockeyed. The left wing was full DC-3 span, The right wing was stubby, 5 feet shorter, with the tip cut clean and a little fairing patched over the end. Anybody who knew airplanes would look at it and know something was badly wrong. Anybody who didn't would still squint at it and think, huh, that's odd, now they needed a pilot. The man who volunteered was named Harold Sweet, Captain Hal Sweet, CNAC, an American former military pilot. One of a whole generation of young Americans who'd gone to China in the 1930s looking for adventure and pilot work, and had found both, Sweet looked at the ship, walked around it, climbed up and looked at the bolted-on wing route, climbed down and said he'd give it a try. The takeoff run, he said later, was the longest few seconds of his flying career. The asymmetric wing meant asymmetric lift. The airplane wanted to roll hard to the right the moment he got any speed up. He had full left aileron, full left rudder. He was standing on the left rudder pedal with both feet, essentially, and cranking the yoke all the way left, and she was still trying to roll over on him. But she flew, wobbly, crabbed, about 20 knots slower than a regular DC-3, and she wanted to turn right whether you asked her to or not. But she flew. He nursed that airplane through the mountain passes. No autopilot, no co-pilot help with the controls, because the controls needed one man's full attention all the time. He flew for somewhere around 3 hours, hand flying, arms and legs burning, sweat running down his back, watching the Chinese countryside roll under that strange mismatched wingspan, and he landed her safely at Hong Kong's Kai Tak Airport. The mechanics there pulled off the DC-2 wing, crated up a proper DC-3 wing that had finally arrived from the States, and bolted it on. The airplane went back into revenue service, flew the rest of the war. Survived. The airplane got a nickname, the DC-2.5. Let me tell you why I love this story.
It's not because of the engineering. Although the engineering is remarkable, and Soldinsky should be in whatever hall of fame exists for mechanics who make the impossible happen. It's not because of Hal Sweet's airmanship, although that was extraordinary too. It's because of what it represents. Back when Avigas was cheap and airspace was free, there was a generation of aviators and mechanics who looked at a broken airplane and a hostile enemy and a deadline, and they figured it out, with hand tools, with cable and pliers and steel plate and tarps. Nobody asked for a permission slip. Nobody waited for an engineering analysis. Nobody cited the airworthiness directive. They had a job to do. They did it. You know what? We've lost in aviation. We've lost a little bit of that. I'm not knocking regulation. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, exists because people got killed in the old days doing exactly this kind of thing, and a lot of times it did not work out. I get it, I flew for an airline, I lived by the manual, but I think about that DC-3 with the wrong wing on it, lifting off a dirt strip in inland China with a pilot who'd never seen the airplane before that morning, and I think there was a kind of faith in that, a faith in your own hands and your own training and the people standing on the ramp who'd bolted the thing together. A faith that a problem had a solution if you were willing to work for it. There's a couple of postscripts to the story. The DC-2.5 stayed in service with CNAC for the rest of the war. There's some dispute about exactly when she was retired and exactly what happened to her, but for a while she was the most famous airplane in China. Photographers came to take pictures of her with the mismatched wing before the mechanics got the chance to swap it out. Those photographs exist. Go find them. They're on the internet. Search for DC-2.5, you'll see her. Goofy looking. Beautiful.
Captain Sweet kept flying the hump for CNAC and later for the Air Transport Command, did thousands of hours over the Himalayas, survived the war, and went home to California. Quiet about the whole thing, the kind of pilot who thought the flying was the point, not the story about the flying, and Zygmunt Soldinsky, the Polish mechanic who looked at a wrecked airplane and a DC-2 wing and said, "Yeah, we can make that work." He stayed in aviation his whole life, worked for Pan American after the war, died in the 1970s. Most of us in this business have never heard his name. We should have. So the next time you're out at a fly-in, or a pancake breakfast, or just hanging around the airport on a Saturday morning watching the Cessna 172s, and the Cubs come and go, and somebody starts telling you some tall tale about some airplane that shouldn't have flown, and somehow did, think about the DC-2.5, because that one really happened. And it's the gold standard that all the rest of our hangar flying tales are measured against. This story came to me through the CNAC Alumni Association's historical records, accounts preserved in the Pan American Archives at the University of Miami, and Gregory Crouch's excellent book on CNAC called China's Wings, which I cannot recommend highly enough if this kind of history grabs you. If you want more stories like this one, we keep a running catalog over at RadioHangar.com. Come by sometime, bring your coffee. I'm Tail Dragger. Keep the shiny side up and keep telling the stories. That's how the old pilots stay alive.